where do you want?
Where you go for a start?
Huh?
Where you go for a start?
No, where it starts, everything will be satisfied. Oh yeah, yeah, that's on the previous page. You're right.
Yogesh Vara, here's
a problem. Exactly. Yes, you want to start? Okay.
Yogeshvara, there is a problem. As women today want the same rights as men, how can they be satisfied? Prabhupada, everything will be satisfied, just like our women, Krishna conscious. They are working. They don't want equal rights with men. It is due to Krishna consciousness. They are
cleansing
the temple. They are cooking very nicely. They are satisfied. They never say that I have to go to Japan for preaching like Prabhupada. They never say. This is artificial. So Krishna conscious means work in his constitutional position. The woman, men, when they remain in their constitutional position, there will be no artificial, indistinct, loud traffic noise.
Yes.
Chrome.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty strong quote, you know. But Prabhupada says, yes, our women, they don't want equal rights. Well, little did Prabhupada know that this would become such a big problem or big topic. I'm sure Prabhupada knew. That's why he put so many strong, you know, comments everywhere that this equality is nonsense. I'm sure he knew. Of course he knew. Probably that's why he said this, you know. You know, because he knew exactly what it would be, you know, 20, 30 years later, you know. That's why he said these things, you know. So, of course, sometimes people say, well, you know, I have to go to Japan for preaching like Prabhupada. They sometimes say to me, well, but what about you, you know? Well, I don't want to defend myself, but definitely while I was married, for all of those who don't know me that well, I was 10 years married. And in my married life, I had also so many ideas, but I knew it's not the right time. And I was really trying my very best to put myself below my husband and follow in his mood, you know. And then when one is in a renounced, you know, phase of life, well, then, you know, if it is one's nature, then it is not that a woman cannot go and travel and preach or something. But as it shows, practically, not so many women have really that nature of living out of a suitcase and, you know, just being always on the road. I mean, it's very few ladies, really. So it just shows, you know, in general terms, you know, it is not really women's nature. But, you know, what can I say? There's also exceptions to the rule type thing. But definitely while a woman is married, you know, she cannot just, oh, I want to travel and preach now in Japan or something, you know. So, and especially in those days when Prabhupada said that, 74, there the movement was not even so far developed, really, that there was, you know, women there who were past the Grihastha Ashram or something, or that would naturally come later, right? So in that time, place, and circumstance, definitely it was unnatural for any woman to say like this. You know, but if a woman has been through all the phases of Brahmacharini life and Grihastha life and then enters the renounced order or stage of life, if it is her nature, why not? You know, like that, we can understand that. Okay, next one is also very interesting. Who wants to read the next one? Okay.
Srila Prabhupada didn't want us to adopt American ways of life. After a Bhagavad Gita lecture, Srila Prabhupada was asked if he was in this world. He replied, just like I'm in America, it is very easy to understand. I'm not adopting any ways of life as the Americans, so I'm not in America. Not only myself, all my disciples who are following me, they are also not Americans. They are different from American behavior, American ways of life. In that sense, I'm not in America. I'm in Vrindavana, because wherever I go, in my apartment or in my temple, I live with Krishna and Krishna consciousness. I don't accept any consciousness of America. And I teach my disciples also to take to that consciousness. So one who takes to that consciousness is also not in America, not in this world.
Yes, very powerful, huh? You know, Prabhupada saying, you know, not only me, but also my disciples, they are following me. They're also not adopting American behavior in ways of life, you know. So, I mean, it makes it pretty clear, you know, that we have to make that transformation. Actually, Shivam Swami also once told me a nice little story that when Prabhupada was just on the way to go to the West and leave India, some of his friends and associates were saying, but, you know, Swamiji, when you go to the West, you have to learn to eat with knife and fork. Otherwise, they will not listen to you. They will not accept you. Right? And then Prabhupada's answer was, no, I'm not going to learn to eat with knife and fork. I'm not going there to learn from them. I'm going there to teach them. You know, and he was not eating with knife and fork. He was just eating with his hands, you know. Yes. Yes. So, I mean, one could very easily say, no, how will Krishna consciousness be accepted if Prabhupada eats with their hands? You know, he has to adjust to the Western way of doing things, you know. But no, I mean, Prabhupada himself, he was very strict in this also. I mean, there's no photos where Prabhupada is in jeans or something, you know. So it doesn't matter what weather was, you know, there's pictures of him walking down in America with his black coat, you know. I'm sure you've seen it, which he got from some hippies there secondhand, you know. Yes. Also, when he went to Moscow, you know, there's pictures of him with woolen hats on and so on, you know, but Prabhupada did not compromise his sannyas cloth, you know. Definitely not. There he didn't, although then Bhaktisiddhanta, he set that other example of, yes, you can also preach in a suit and drive around in the car. You know, it seems contradictory, but now, according to time, place, and circumstance, they were teaching different principles, you know. At Bhaktisiddhanta's times, people were too narrow, thinking, oh, these Westerners can never become devotees or something, you know. And there Bhaktisiddhanta was preaching this point, that in order not to, you know, confront people with the day of the spiritualist there, if they're still in the night of the day of the materialist. So then no problem, for the sake of preaching, we can do any sacrifice, even putting on a suit. And Prabhupada said to Hari Kesh when he sent him to Russia, you know, and Hari Kesh said, oh, there will be no vegetarian food to eat. Prabhupada said, if there's no vegetables, you can eat meat. Yeah. That's somewhere in some of the books, you know, I've read it. Of course, there will never be a situation where there is no vegetables, very clear, so it doesn't mean that we have to go to McDonald's now or something. But no, but that Prabhupada simply made that, you know, highest principle of, for the sake of preaching, we should be willing to sacrifice anything, you know, yes. So Bhaktisiddhanta made that same instruction, gave that same instruction by saying, by you know, preaching in a suit and driving in a car. But then for Prabhupada, you know, he had to teach something differently. He had to teach the opposite, that we don't accept American ways of life. But we go there to preach and teach them, you know. So it's quite interesting, you know. Yes. Okay. Yes. Do we have any more doubts, questions, comments about this morning's topic before we move on to lesson number 2? Now is your chance to reveal them. Well, looks like we have churned it all well enough this morning. Now, have you got number 2 there? Yeah, maybe we give this out now so we don't have to interrupt.
Is it like starting for the English ones already on the back side? No?
Yes, for the English one it starts on the back side. What did you want to say, Philip?
Yeah, I want to ask you, why is it so... unverständlich? So, das, also ich hatte so am Anfang, was redet sie denn da? So, das weiß ich doch alles. Und was könnte mir jetzt einfallen, um das Seminar so zu canceln,
ah,
wie es weitergeht? Ja, so, was ist das? Sorry, das ist ja nur mein Geist. Ne?
Okay.
Also, so, das hat mit mir nicht so viel zu tun. so was ist das, so diese, so warum sage ich nicht einfach, okay, das weiß ich, okay, das hilft mir jetzt aber, das anzunehmen. Warum habe ich da so einen Widerstand?
So the question for those who don't understand English, German. So what he's saying in the very first phase of the morning, you know, his mind was saying, oh, I know all this, you know, maybe I don't need to be here, maybe I can leave the seminar or something. And what is it which gives some resistance there, that, you know, some things, well, you really thought you know it all, and that's why it was boring? Or was there something which was objecting a little bit, and you know, the contaminated intelligence was saying, oh, I know this all? Can you distinguish there or define more? Because I mean,
I had the same experience because we did it in Munich already.
Yeah, sometimes I give this just as a Sunday feast program or something, or just some introductory thing. I give the initial thing just to make people understand what is this all about, you know? Yeah. I warned you already, right?
That's why I was...
But see, there's two reasons. First of all, you know, an introduction, just to set the ground so we are all on the same page, so to speak, is always maybe for some people already selbstverständlich, you know, self-explanatory stuff. You know, it's not so big news or something. But then for others, they have never thought about these things, and they're also younger in devotional service. So I have to, you know, set the basis so we all have the same understanding of culture, because I tell you frankly, culture is such a broad term. I once got an email saying, oh yeah, I heard you opened an Institute for Spiritual Culture by the name, I am a Bharatanatyam dancer, you know, so maybe I can be part of your institute or something, you know. Tänzer, huh? Indischer Tänzer. So, I mean, you know, people have... a very broad understanding of what is culture, you know, and of course dancing and art is also part of culture, and very often we only use it like this. So that's why I have to, you know, to set a common ground here for the whole further discussion. So this could be one reason why you thought, oh yeah, I all know this, but you saw how many questions came up just at the point of devotional close, you know. So obviously we are not so conscious and really clear on it. And otherwise this whole Krishna West preaching wouldn't, you know, get its foot in the door if we were all really clear in these things, you know. So it can be one reason that you really have thought about these things already and it was simply an old hat for you. Well, yeah, that's like that in an introduction, that for some people it is an old hat. But then the other reason could be, yeah, that somehow, you know, there was some entity there objecting. I don't know.
It's more so emotional.
Okay, well, emotions, that's a platform of the mind.
Yeah.
I like and I don't like, feeling, willing,
mm-hmm.
thinking, and, you know. Don't know. Maybe no need to worry too much about it.
Maybe it's really a challenge to do these things. It's not so easy. Like
oh, it
for
is.
Me,
yes.
For me, I find it really hard to go really in this male role. It's not easy. Actually, I don't want it. But it's, yeah.
Well,
it's
I tell you one thing. Because it means we have to do some internal work, some transformation. We have to actually let go, you know, of some luggage, you know, some conditioning, some likes, you know. And yeah, I mean, a lot of us in ISKCON, we don't even want to do this. That's why we didn't join Krishna consciousness. We're too lazy. We just want to keep it as it is, and just, yeah, chant Hare Krishna, yeah, it's all right, you know, and we just avoid the hard work, because Krishna consciousness is hard work, actually. You know, there's no room for laziness and complacency. There's even one purport where Prabhupada says, an easygoing life in Krishna consciousness or progress in spiritual life don't go together. You know? And yeah, we are conditioned like this, that we rather want an easygoing life here, you know? And we actually don't really want to do all this internal work and be introspective and look what's going on there and this and that and then the mind and, you know, and the material intelligence blocks off and, you know, and simply doesn't want to do that internal work, you know? And that's exactly why I'm always emphasizing that we don't establish what's right and wrong here. We are not forcing and imposing anything on anybody, but we simply want to become conscious of these two cultures we are like, which are like day and night, and we see this broad spectrum here. And we simply, you know, let's be honest and assess ourselves here, where are we at on the spectrum, you know? And then the pressure is gone, you know. Then it's not like we're pressurizing here everybody now to give up the pizza and you know, and all this, you know. No, we're not pressurizing anybody. And if there's somebody who still likes to listen to the rock and roll with Hare Krishna words, okay, no problem. But let's be clear, you know, that sooner or later we should, you know, to change our taste. I think that summarizes it the best, actually, that we have to change our taste and behaviors and likes and dislikes and all that. And that requires internal work. It will not happen automatically. See, if we refuse to make this internal work, we are actually basically committing the 10th offense. To maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter, you know? So we don't want to do that. We don't want to be stubborn and stagnant, but we simply, it requires honesty, you know? And self-assessment, that we say, okay, I'm still at that end, and hopefully one day, I will get there also. What we should never do, and this is the common tendency, that we adjust the philosophy to, you know, to defend my shortcomings and my material attachments, right? That we, you know, we pull the whole standard down and change the philosophy fee a bit just to make myself feel good. Yeah, actually, this is not possible anyway. Or it doesn't even matter just because I don't like to wear a dhoti and I don't want to have every day some washing, you know, and I'm too lazy for this. That's why I'm twist the philosophy and say, actually, no need for this. You know? It doesn't make any difference. Chanting Hare Krishna is transcendental, whether I had jeans on a dhoti, no problem. You know, so this is what happens all the time, that we change the philosophy just to accommodate and defend my shortcomings, my attachments, my false ego. And this is something very dangerous, but it's happening all the time. And the root cause of that is basically just a lack of honesty. We are not honest enough. We are not humble enough to say, I'm sorry, this is what I'm like, that's my level. And I, you know, one day maybe, if Krishna and Guru are merciful, maybe I will get to a higher level. But at the moment, I'm on the low level. So if we have that humility and that honesty, then no need to change the philosophy. But if that's not there, that humility is lacking to say, well, I'm sorry, I'm at that end here. I have not really made much transformation yet, and I'm only realizing that I'm supposed to do this. I never even knew. You know, if we can be honest and humble, then no need to change the philosophy. But Kali Yuga is the age of cheating and hypocrisy, and everybody wants to pretend what a great, you know, devotee and spiritualist he or she is. And well, if we have that tendency to pretend and cheat, then we will rather change the philosophy just to make it comfortable for my attachments and so on, you know? Right? Oh, it happens in all different areas, you know, like fourth principle is also a famous one, you know, no illicit sex life. People love to just twist the philosophy and say, oh, well, nobody can follow it anyway, and what's the use, and no need to try, and you know, and. So we just pull the whole level down just to, you know, yes, just to support my material desires, basically. You know? No, no. Let's be honest. Let's be honest and introspective and humble and admit on what level we are. Without this honesty, not much chance to make any progress, you know? If we try and cheat ourselves there, you know? Right? Okay. Is that kind of giving a satisfying answer? Ram Gopal Prabhu, you came up with the idea initially. Yeah? Okay.
But it's possible to become Krishna conscious also with jeans. There are no fixed rules for chanting Hare Krishna.
Yes, it is. It is possible.
Yes.
But if we really want to enter Krishna's confidential pastimes, we do have to change our taste.
Yeah.
That's the point.
I mean, there's no taste of jeans making parikram or.
See, it depends all on our attachments. If we are attached to wearing jeans, well, then it can be an obstacle, you know? But if we are not attached, and sometimes just to go in the forest and chop the trees so we can heat the heating or whatever for Krishna, then no problem. Of course you can wear jeans. It's a matter of attachment.
Yes.
Right? God, we are really churning this topic today.
Can it be the other way around, where we get too attached to our external clothes? And
well, then that, yeah, I mean, that's, what's the verse? you know, to either be too attached to rules or regulations or to be neglectful, Rupa Goswami.
Yeah.
Oh, my Bhakti Shastri course is too far behind.
Something agama.
Atya prayasasha.
I eat too much or eat too little and sleep too much and sleep too little, that.
And being,
no.
Nectar of construction.
Prayasasha. Pajava niyamagraha. So niyamagraha, that's the one. Niyamagraha means to either be too attached to following the rules and regulations and becoming fanatic about every little rule for the sake of rule, then there's also an ego thing in it, or the opposite, to become too negligent, you know, in following rules and regulations. So yes, that's the whole thing what I was saying initially. These topics are all very sensitive. We cannot allow the ego to enter, because as soon as we go in the other extreme and we say, without a dhoti, you cannot, you know, become Krishna conscious, and oh, he's not wearing a dhoti, and you know, so then that becomes the other extreme. That becomes simply fanaticism, you know, because attachment and aversion are the other side of the same coin. So if we're too fanatically attached there in a material sense of wearing, you know, devotional cloth, that's not actually developing a deeper taste, but it's just some fanaticism, some fanatic attachment to rules. So yes, Rupa Goswami says that's also, you know, an obstacle, you know. So it's not a question of fanatically following rules, but it is a question of really changing the taste. Right? Yeah? Anyway, don't worry. I'm sure eventually it will settle, you know, and really there's no loss when you're in India to make this experiment. In 40 days you wear a dhoti. You know, because see, that's the point. If you would be detached, then you would say, yeah, why not? I can take it or leave it. I thought the bhakta pants are more practical.
I have a dhoti, of course, but during daytime.
Well, so
I go to school, there's little children coming.
Anyway, these are just reasons the contaminated intelligence comes up, you know. Huh? So big deal, let the kids have a bit of fun.
Every day, no.
there's so many teachers who are, there's so many
it's
teachers
so
who wear dhoti,
you know. It's good to have a dhoti, you have to give an example.
Yeah.
You could wear your pants under the dhoti.
Anyway, folks, let's move on.
John.
Let's move on, otherwise we are forever stuck on this dhoti. I mean, I really, it's the first time I make this course for the men, so I never thought
make,
that
make
this...
Switch to dhoti subject.
No. Looks like this is such an important one, so obviously, you know, and that's what we all get from Krishna West there, so obviously we have to become clear in this, you know. So, but now, let's turn to lesson number two. So the introductory discussion is the meaning of hierarchy. Maybe we can quickly do a little brainstorming here. You want to write?
Bad handwriting.
Let's collect just some brainstorming. What comes to your mind when you hear the word hierarchy? And we can write the positive things on the top. And the negative things, you start on the bottom and work your way up. Yes. Okay, hierarchy.
Ordnung.
Order.
Authority.
Is that bad or good?
Neutral.
So you write it in the middle, authority. Okay, what else?
Good.
Huh?
Good.
Good.
Is that good?
Structure. That's good.
Good. Right, good. Okay, somebody said structure here.
Suppressing sometimes.
Okay, yes, definitely. Suppressing.
Abuse.
That bad?
Abuse. Yes. Suppressing and abuse. What else?
Natural phenomena.
Natural phenomena.
They're good.
Yes, of course.
Well.
Yes.
What do you mean by natural?
Well, we were here. Very true. So, what else?
Guru.
Guru, okay. What else?
Guru. Faith is required.
Yes, okay. Faith.
Faith is required.
Yes. What else?
Pujari.
Pujari.
Rules and regulations.
Yeah.
Words and regulations, yes. Okay. What about power and control? Is this good or bad?
In the middle. Exploitation.
Exploitation.
Empowerment.
Yes, empowerment.
Is that good?
Empowerment. Yes, empowerment, of course it's good. Of course it can be misused.
Mm.
And?
Freedom from false ego, if we follow the hierarchy.
Okay, freedom of false ego, very good.
Obedience.
Yes, yes. Obedience, yes, also a good one. Okay.
Blind following.
Yes, also there. That's ego. Blind following, well, you could have. Oh, hang on, blind following, you can put more down, you know? That's not so good. Come on, put it down. That, yes. We want to keep a little bit of order here, you know. Yes.
I cannot come on the word, but when in society you can climb up, like women nowadays want to have their own, how you call this? Climbing up. Huh?
Ambitiousness or
ambition,
something? Yes.
Career.
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 Yeah, ambition, career ladder. Put it all on.
Climb up on the ladder of
yeah.
Yes.
Is it neutral
or bad?
Yeah, well, in woman terms, it is.
Doesn't exist. It's illusion.
Okay. Well, I guess we...
Dynasty.
Dynasty.
Bodily platform. You are my son, so you are the next king.
Hierarchy. Yeah, not sure. Somehow it doesn't really fit. Huh?
I was thinking about a pyramid, but then by the structure. Huh? But
yeah.
Like a pyramid going to the top.
Well, you can write next to structure, you can put a dash and write pyramid there. You know?
Can I draw a pyramid? Mm-hmm.
Or you can draw one, no problem.
I don't know how to spell it.
Pyramid.
Yeah.
Pyramid.
This is cooler
though. Okay, this is very cool, yes. Okay, well.
Mercy by Parampara.
Mercy by Parampara. Yes, okay. Mercy, Parampara. Put it on there.
Blessings.
On the top. Blessings, yeah. That's also a good one. Okay.
Care.
Huh?
Care.
Yes, yes,
the
good.
One before care.
Blessings.
And yeah, I mean, that should come right on the top, actually. Anyway, care, blessings.
Qualification. The church.
Qualification, yeah, qualification also there. So now we're a little bit mixed up in the order here, huh?
Intelligence,
yes, can also be there.
Just so it's clear.
Yes, intelligence. Yes, I mean, it's not that this will be so important for the rest of the course here. It's just when we put it a little bit like that, it's kind of, you can better see it, you know. Okay, so I think this is enough. You can sit down. Thank you very much. Even though there's, of course, so many more things there. But anyway, I mean, yeah, we see there's a lot more positive there than negative. But for some people, this word hierarchy is almost like a loaded term, you know, loaded with negativity. So now, interestingly, the word hierarchy comes from Greek language and actually means divine order. So it basically means, you know, hierarchy is a system given by Krishna. It's a divine order which he has given to this world so that there is protection and care of all living entities, actually. You know? That's the purpose of hierarchy. So now, of course, who is on the top of the hierarchy?
Krishna.
Krishna, yes, exactly. Krishna is the top of the hierarchy, and everybody else is below, is servant, right? So, but what happens if Krishna is removed from the top?
Then we become the top.
Yes, then somebody wants to become the top, and then...
Competition.
Chaos.
Yes, competition, chaos. What else?
Maya is in the top.
Exploitation, abuse, oppression. Right? That sets in. The whole divine order turns in an exploitative system. Right? Because somebody else there wants to be the big enjoyer, the big boss. Yes, and then that whole suppressive feature actually goes down from level to level, you know. Everybody exploits the one below, you know. We have this bicycle example, you know. How do you say? To the top. Nach oben hin buckeln und nach unten hin treten.
Die Hühnerleiter, ne? Wird das genannt.
Ja. Die Hühnerleiter. The hen ladder. You know? Yeah, or we give that example also with a bicycle, you know? To the top you make a round back and you know, you tolerate, but to the bottom of you kick down, you know? So that's what happens if Krishna is removed from the hierarchy. In other words, if people become godless, you know, if God consciousness disappears, then the whole hierarchy becomes a system for exploitation and it invites competition and envy and all these kind of things, right? And abuse. So, but very clear, what is the solution?
Put Krishna back?
Yes, to put Krishna back on the top. Right? The solution is not independence, equality, freedom. No, because it is a divine system, it will always exist. It's Krishna's divine system, Krishna's order. And this is, of course, very important to understand, you know, because really there the whole world goes wrong, you know, especially in regards to this whole women's issue, you know. Krishna's hierarchy is that man is supposed to protect women. Man is above woman in order to protect her. But then if men become... You know, they lose their God consciousness, then they exploit and suppress and abuse women. It's been going on, you know, all over the world in different ways. So, and usually that's the problem that, you know, we think, especially we women think, okay, the solution is independence, equality, women's liberation. Yeah, this even is starting in Bangladesh now too, because of course overall Kali Yuga also enters there, and people in general become less God conscious, and the women are abused. And now there's this whole movement there that, yes, the women have to become independent and equal and all that, you know. But that really increases the misery of the women, definitely. Right? I mean, now it's 50, 60 years after this whole women's liberation movement. And we can see, has it brought some increased happiness to the women or something? I mean, there's statistics which say that 60% of all women over 40 in America live alone. 60% of all women over 40. And I'm sure they are not so happy, you know, because it's simply not the nature, you know, for a woman to live alone, you know. You wanted to say something?
I would like to confirm this. I've been once in America, and I was looking for an airport, for a phone number, and before you come to an airport, you come to abortion. You find this. So pages and pages of doctors who are, you know, openly offering abortions. So it's confirming. That's what independence brought about.
Yes.
Men become useless. Woman seeking, okay, if you are already useless, I make myself useful. That's the wrong direction.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, we will get to it very soon. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so now also one interesting thing is, really, you know, as long as Krishna is on the top of the hierarchy, what does it mean to be higher? What does it mean practically?
To
be higher in the hierarchy. What does it mean practically? Just to make it clear.
Responsibility
to do what?
Take care.
Yes, to take care, to protect. That's what it means to be higher. To take care and protect. Right? Those who are below us. But really, when Krishna is removed from the hierarchy, then higher and lower becomes a whole competitive thing. See? Interesting, just recently I was asked to write something about this topic of women being a lower birth. You know? Because in the Shastra this is said, being a woman is a lower birth. So, very clear, you know? Lower birth means it's relating to the body. Right? So it means this whole thing, what we discussed this morning, that the vehicles have different functions. And of course, the male vehicle is superior in that hierarchy because he is meant to protect the woman. That's what it means. You know, because as we read, Prabhupada says, man, woman are together, she becomes pregnant, she will need protection. That's what it means, that she is a lower birth. Simply, in regards to the vehicle she is driving. It's like the vehicle, you know, has a smaller engine or something, you know, or whatever, you know, or it's one of those old go-go mobiles or something that has only three wheels instead of four or something, you know. So it's simply the vehicle, you know, because it needs that protection of the man. That's why the male birth is higher, otherwise how can he play that function of protecting her, you know. But because, you know, we have not quite placed Krishna back on the top of the pyramid here, the hierarchy, that's why it's interesting to understand, when we hear woman is a lower birth, then immediately this competitive thing comes in. Oh, what's that, lower? Oh, what is this? Does that mean women cannot be devotees and blah, you know? And then people just blah, lose it all, you know? So we are simply so conditioned by this materialistic viewpoint of thinking higher is better and lower is bad or something. But no, when Krishna is on the top, it simply means higher protects lower. You know, like in the examples of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, same thing. They are also, you know, that divine order, Krishna was removed in due course, and the whole thing became exploitation. The Brahmanas exploit the Kshatriyas, Kshatriyas exploit the Vaishyas, Vaishyas exploit the Sudras, everybody is exploiting each other. You know, but same thing, communist system tried to make it all equal. No, it doesn't work. It is a divine order. In any human society, you will have these four classes. So all we have to do is put Krishna back on the top. That's the answer. And once we talk now, for example, when we discuss Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, they're not so easily this competitive mood comes in. There we have a little bit more that understanding that, yes, okay, Brahmana, they have brahminical nature, you know, even though, yeah, we also kind of are a little maybe disrespectful to the sutras, even though sutras have actually very good qualities, you know. But nevertheless, just especially with this man-woman thing, when we hear their lower or higher birth, you know, we just really get it wrong. There's immediately this competitive nature comes in, you know, which is not there if Krishna's on the top of the pyramid, the hierarchy, right? Makes sense? Yeah, so interesting to understand, you know, because some people, they lose their minds over these shastric, statements, simply, because we are too materialistic conditioned and we don't understand what it means at the lower birth. It simply means because she's protected by the man. She has to be lower, otherwise how can the man protect her if he's not higher? You know? Very simple, actually. Yeah.
But then the question comes up, what with these other distinctions, like races? You know, some people say black races.
Yes, I was thinking of that too. Yeah, yeah.
Prabhupada
made.
Prabhupada
made heavy statements. You know.
Yes.
Whatever. Maybe homosexual. They are.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to get too much into details, but
these distinctions are doing something. But they are also exceptions, like some black people who are very black body, but very exalted person.
No, see.
Women.
Hang on, let's be clear, you know, that this higher and lower birth only relates to the body. It only relates to the body, but not to the soul.
The soul,
right?
Yeah.
Soul is soul. You know, it's not that the soul in a woman's body is of, you know, lower quality or something. No, as we said, the equality is there on the level of the soul. So it only relates to the vehicle, nothing else. And also it does not relate to qualification for spiritual life. There are so many quotes where Prabhupada says this, you know. The lower birth of a woman, for example, is really only in regards to the birth. But it is not saying anything about spiritual advancement. There is quotes where Prabhupada even says, yes, but female... You know, women, actually, for them it's easier because they're simple-hearted, they can take up any religious system. They're already put by nature in a subservient and serving position, you know. So it is in many ways actually easier. So it has nothing to do with qualification for spiritual progress. So in black race, yes, there's definitely statements in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada says, you know, black race is lower birth. So again, we can simply say black race, black body, the vehicle is of a lower quality. That's all it means. You know, not so good karma, basically. You know, that's all it means. But it does not mean that this is a disqualification for Krishna consciousness. Of course not. You know, on the level of the soul, there is equality. So you just have a less advanced vehicle you're driving here by taking birth in a black body. Right? That's all it is. Yeah? Okay. Yes. Are you ready for more? Or you
yes.
want to quickly stand up and stretch and jump and get the blood flowing? Come on, quick.
Jumping.
Stand up. Oh, stretch, jump. Stand on your head. Whatever you have to do.
5 minutes here.
To get the blood flowing and the prasadam jumping. Okay.
Yoga-Übung. Wenn man einfach die Hände so ein bisschen nach hinten verschränkt und dann mit Kraft nach oben die Finger spreizen und schnell hoch und runter.
Okay. Tomorrow you have to get your camera.
Das Atmen natürlich nicht vergessen. Hoch und runter und spreizen. Der Kreislauf ist gleich tiptop in Ordnung. Und kräftig die Hände nach hinten durch. Ja, los, gib mal Gas. Das okay, jetzt müsstet ihr mal ausschütteln und jetzt müsstet ihr euch alle gut fühlen, oder?
Okay, gut. Und dann können wir uns hinsetzen und weitermachen.
Lass ihn dann dazu haben. Oder?
Yes.
Total, ne?
Super. So now, now actually this is usually this is the toughest chapter usually for the women. The toughest day. Yes. Who is leading? The men or the women? So what do you think? Who is leading?
Depends who's authority.
Krishna is leading.
Now we mean on higher levels as a principle. Well,
Super-soul.
They both lead in their own ways. And we will discover how they lead both in their own ways. Yes. To say yes, the men are leading is definitely right. But to say yes, the women are leading is also right. We will hear. So of course, on the transcendental platform, we know Krishna is the only male actually. He is the supreme enjoyer and controller. And all living entities are female and meant to be enjoyed by the Lord. They're all Prakriti, as we heard this morning in the Bhagavatam class. And of course, Krishna's pleasure potency appears as Srimati Radharani. So she gives us that example. She is most expert in giving pleasure to the Lord, in being enjoyed by the Lord. And through her selfless devotion, she actually controls him, right? We all know that Radharani is the one who controls the supreme controller. Yes. Not by telling him what to do and what not to do, but through her love, through her selfless, you know, completely sacrificing herself in giving pleasure to Krishna, she ties him up and she controls him actually. That's the power of love, you see. Much more powerful than order or controlling through fear, you know, controlling through love, much more powerful. So now, the same principle in a somewhat perverted reflection we do find in this material world between men and women. Yes, same principle is going on. That men are meant to dominate and lead, You know, we mentioned that already. That's what the male vehicle is built for, to provide, protect, and take charge, and basically dominate and lead. So man is meant for that. And women are meant to be the energy to men. Yes. So, same thing, what is going on between Krishna and Radharani is also in a perverted reflection going on between man and woman, you know? It's, I mean, even others say this, like this whole yin-yang thing, you know? There's also the male nature and energy and the female, you know?
Only in the conditioned life, or is it also in Vaikuntha they are married and so on?
Sorry, what was the question? If they are married
this
in Vaikuntha?
It's only in the material world, right? In the conditioned
stage. Male and female is everywhere.
Well, you know, in the spiritual world, it is basically on the absolute platform in regards to Krishna, that Krishna is the only kind of male type, everybody else is enjoyed by him, you know? But nevertheless, of course, there's also man, woman in Vaikuntha, and they also have relationships, they just don't have any sex life. But they're married. Yes, they simply, you know, enjoy that kind of rasas there, flavors, in cooperation in serving Krishna. There's purports where Prabhupada describes the Vaikuntha atmosphere, how the women have so beautiful bodies and large hips and all this, and they're so attracted. But there's a higher level of sense enjoyment. Sex life is completely non-existing because they simply have a higher level of enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
Simply being so absorbed and giving pleasure to Krishna and you know, supporting each other and helping each other and assisting and serving, the sex life, what? Huh? You know, they have better things to do, you know? You know. So from that point of view, your question is a bit tricky because that perverted reflection as it is here, we will not find in the spiritual world, but nevertheless, there is male bodies and female bodies and they have relationships, just no sex life. Mm? Okay, so yes, now it's time for the next. Did I get this already? Did you distribute it? Only not to me or something. Okay. No problem. Yes, so. You know, men are meant to dominate and lead, and women are meant to be the energy to men. So now we can say the more expert a woman is in allowing herself to be the auspicious source of energy to men, the more she also indirectly actually becomes the controller of men. In the same way, what Srimati Radharani is doing with Krishna, actually. This is in a perverted reflection also going on in this world, you know. And the more she will receive everything she needs in order to be happy and satisfied. Right? Let us maybe just read a few quotes to become a little more clearer what this auspicious source of energy to man means, right? Because you might not quite understand really what we mean here or what Prabhupada means by saying, you know, women are meant to be the auspicious source of energy to man, right? A little vague maybe. So let us simply read. Maybe I'll just read the first two because they're so short. Here, 421.4 from the Bhagavatam. I only took one sentence out. Later on, I will give this whole paragraph. But there Prabhupada says, when thus protected, women as a class remain an always auspicious source of energy to man. There he says this clearly in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says in the whole purport that if a woman is internally and externally pure and clean, and she is protected by the father, by the husband, by the son, then she will remain an always auspicious source of energy to men. Right? Basically, we have to understand, for a woman, in order to be the auspicious source of energy to men, she has to put herself below. Otherwise, she cannot give her energy to men. That's why it is so important, you know, that's what we read already this morning, you know, with the reporter, where the reporter says, so all the social, you know, difficulties and problems will be solved, you know, and Prabhupada says, yes, you know, if the woman puts herself, submits and puts herself in this subordinate position, then the man is ready to take charge. That inspires him to protect, provide, and take charge. So that's the whole point. One can even imagine it from an energetic point of view. Obviously, if the woman is meant to give her energy to the man, she has to put herself below, otherwise she can't be the energy to man, right? As soon as she wants to be next to the man or two steps ahead of the man, she will not be able and she will not agree to give her energy to the man. You understand this?
Mm-hmm. Therefore, this family structure is so important, isn't it? I mean, I can, this autobiographic response, if you allow that. So, in our family, since we're married since 10 years, so I'm working and she's at home. This is very healthy. I mean, she does the work, you know, the cleaning, the cooking and all this, you know. But on the other hand, it's a very, she is very submissive in that sense, but not, you know, you are the servant, you are my protector, not that way. But naturally, since I have to work, you know, must be, so automatically in the structure, she's there at home. It's very healthy for the kids.
Yes,
and
we figured
out, you know, that she takes the job too. And even if the thought came to the kids, you know, we felt the structure was disturbed.
Exactly. Very good. I'm glad you're sharing it. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, we had this realization. We said, this
yes.
is nonsense.
Yes.
But
yes.
It doesn't work like that.
Yes. Yes. Very, very true. Yes. Yes. We will discuss this a little later. The high position and function and contribution of mother. This is completely lost and forgotten in materialistic culture. But in spiritual culture, the mothers, they're almost like the queens, you know? I mean, that's where the queen actually comes from. She is like the godly mother, you know, representing God, you know? She's like, she's Lakshmi Devi, you know? And actually the mother and the wife is meant to be some little Lakshmi Devi in the house there. Yeah. Oh, it's a whole lost science and knowledge, you know, and that's what creates all this havoc in society. We will get to it, you know, but good that you shared, yeah, good. I'm glad that there's somebody who's got the...
realization of it.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Probably my wife has given you the example what her mother said about the head and neck.
Yes, yes, yes. Actually, I have a similar example. We'll park that. We'll get there. Yes. Yeah, I was very happy to hear that because I have almost the same analogy here. Yes. Yes. All right. So, and then 4:26:15. Actually, a woman is supposed to be the energy of the man. Historically, in the background of every great man, there's either a mother or a wife. You know, again, that feminine energy, you know, has to be in the background of every great man, or every man actually. And it is, Prabhupada says, in the background. He's not saying next to, or two steps ahead, or something, but he says in the background. You know, only then she can give her energy to the man. She has to put herself below in order to be able to give her energy to the man. Let him be the hero, you know, so to speak. Sometimes people wonder, what does it actually mean? And of course, spiritually, we can say, well, there's only one hero, and that's Prabhupada and Krishna or something. No, we don't mean it like this, but just to more clearly understand it in practical life, the man, let him be the hero. Don't the women also want to be the hero? But no, she gives her energy to him and lets him be the hero, basically.
Before marriage, you're
not
hero.
No, but it should be.
Yeah.
It should be the whole.
Mostly welcome.
So next year you send her to the women's course.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a must. No, truly. I mean, for the women, this course is always completely a paradigm shift. You know?
Well, you were giving in Bangladesh, wasn't it?
Yeah, just now, but I give it also every year here. I gave it 2 times here already. Last year in Easter, and the year before in the summer holidays.
Okay.
Yeah, so I will give it, I continue giving it every year here, you know. In Mayapur also, and Ukraine also. Yeah.
But my idea is it's better to really concentrate on Krishna. It is difficult to tell the woman you have to do like that, you have to be...
This is one topic which a man, I have to warn you, you know, don't try and preach about this too outspokenly, you know, that, oh, the woman has to put herself below... This is one topic which cannot come from a man's mouth.
I'm your hero now.
Yeah. No. Even Bhakti Chuswami told me, you know, these topics. That's why I'm taking this up as my humble mission there, because it has to come from a woman's mouth. If this comes from a man's mouth, immediately will be taken as anti-women, macho preaching, women hater, and. So you very true, but nevertheless, you know, we have to understand Krishna's system here, you know, and we just have to be careful that not our false ego enters this and we go home now and say, yes, now I know it here, the men are the hero, you have to put yourself below and be the energy to me, and so on. So, of course, this is not going to do anything. But let's just, you know, because you will see, we will come to a very important conclusion, you know, what it actually means if the women really are the auspicious source of energy to men. There will be a very important conclusion following that, you know, but we are not quite there yet. So let's just go systematically here. So who wants to read 5.129, the verse and the long purport?
He greatly loved his wife, Bahishmati, and with the increase of days, the exchange of nuptial love also increased. Nuptial love?
Nuptial. What does it mean here?
Ehrlich.
Married.
No, it's conjugal, huh?
Conjugal, intimate.
Conjugal.
But innocent, a little more innocent.
A little more innocent.
Flirting.
By her feminine behavior, as she dressed herself, walked, got up, smiled, laughed, and glanced about, Queen Bahishmati increased his energy. Thus, although he was a great soul, he appeared lost in the feminine conduct of his wife. He behaved with her just like an ordinary man, but actually he was a great soul. Perfect. To maintain such a life of strict vigilance, one needs encouragement from his wife. In the Vanashram Dham system, certain classes, such as the Brahmanas and Sannyasis, do not need encouragement from the opposite sex. Kshatriyas and Grihasthas, however, actually need the encouragement of their wives in order to execute their duties. Indeed, a Grihastha or Kshatriya cannot properly execute his responsibilities without the association of his wife. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally admitted that a Grihastha must live with a wife. Kshatriyas were even allowed to have many wives to encourage them in discharging the duties of government. The association of a good wife is necessary in a life of karma and political affairs. To execute his duties properly, therefore, Maharaj Priyavrata took advantage of his good wife Vahismati, who was always very expert in pleasing her great husband by properly dressing herself, smiling, and exhibiting her feminine bodily features. Queen Vahismati always kept Maharaj Priyavrata very encouraged, and thus he executed his governmental duty very properly. In this verse, Eva has twice been used to indicate that Maharaj Priyavrata acted exactly like a hen-pecked husband and thereby seemed to have lost his sense of human responsibility. Actually, however, he was fully conscious of his position as a spirit soul, although he seemingly behaved like an acquiescent karmi husband.
What's acquiescent mean?
Acquiescent.
Ergeben?
Mm.
Is it? Mm. Surrendered.
Surrendered?
Yes. Henpecked is a very common term. Henpecked means you're simply like, you know, the dancing dog in the hands of a woman, you know?
Pantoffelheld.
Yeah, that you're simply a toy there in the woman's hands, you know. Yeah, so anyway, this is a pretty, you know, good verse in purport, which really describes this. First of all, in the verse, it's nicely described how Queen Vahismati is encouraging her husband, you know, with her feminine behavior and mood and energy and so on. Of course, that's not all the women are doing, just look pretty and smile or something, you know. But in any case, it gives the idea, you know. And then in the purport, Prabhupada makes a few important points. First of all, that actually only the brahmanas and sannyasis, they do not need encouragement from the opposite sex. So in other words, this feminine energy is actually almost required for any man. In order to be inspired and active and motivated, they need this feminine energy. And exceptions are really only very brahminical persons, which are very hard to find in this world, you know, and sannyasis. All others need that feminine auspicious source of energy, you know. So that's a really important point to understand, you know. Yes. So, and again, it's Krishna's perfect arrangement to make sure the women are protected, so that the men also need that feminine energy, you know, otherwise, well, which man would protect the women then, you know? They wouldn't, maybe, but just to make sure, very deep and interesting, how it actually all fits together in Krishna's divine system here, just to make sure the women are protected, you know, so the men actually also need that energy from the women, because that's what inspires and motivates them. You're saying? Yes?
What I don't understand is that Prabhupada also gave a lot of lectures where he says men, if they come to Krishna consciousness and are not married, they should not marry. They should try brahmachari, and women, they usually shall marry. And it came to such a statement that Srila Prabhupada gave the order to one of his disciples in the early days that he said that every man should take brahmacharya and every woman should be married, and they were asking, but that's impossible. You cannot And he just said, yeah, that's your management. You must.
Yes.
So
yes.
How is it fitting? How is it going together?
Well, I have heard several explanations on this. First of all, that, you know, a man, even though he might be married, should still remain brahmachari. He should, you know, be fixed up and you know, and celibate, actually. You know, that's why Prabhupada also called his grihasthas, he called them grihastha sannyasis, you know, because they were living like sannyasis. They were married, but they were living in common rooms with a curtain in between, and, you know, I mean, they were not enjoying married life or something. They were just out there in the mission, you know. And so that's one explanation. Other explanation I can simply share from Bangladesh, that it's indeed like this, that all the brahmacharis remain brahmacharis and all the women get married. Because if the culture is really so strong that the women really remain the auspicious source of energy, then it is very easy for the men to remain brahmachari. And in Bangladesh, this is brahmachari loka. We have hundreds of brahmacharis and they remain brahmacharis. I mean, I've been there for 15 years. I have only seen a handful of boys getting married, even though I can also detect that some boys are not properly situated and it would actually be better for them to move on and get married. But nevertheless, they are strong, you know, because the whole atmosphere is not so contaminating and agitating and sensually, you know, agitating. So, yeah, there we do have this, that the women, they marry people from the congregation who are not becoming brahmachari, and the brahmachari actually remain brahmacharis. And the saffron is such high respect for them. Somebody in saffron is like sadhu. They don't even consider that any of these boys they could marry or something. There's no room in their heads for this. You know? Yes. So these two explanations are there, you know. Yeah.
I remember a statement from Jayadvaita Swami. Brahmacharis, what is then with a woman? Who protects a woman? No? And Jayadvaita Swami's answer was, it will never happen. There will always be.
Yes.
No problem, don't worry about it.
I once had somebody making this comment, some boy saying, yes, but then how will the procreation go on, you know? And I also said to him, don't you worry, you know, that there will always be some people, you know. But he kind of wanted to make out that this is a high spiritual duty here, otherwise if he's not going to do it, then nobody's going to do it, you know. The contaminated intelligence bringing up some strong justifications here, you know. Yes.
And also Prabhupada said that he considered the grihasthas who just have sex for, like, it should be in the proper way for getting children, that they are considered as brahmacharis.
Yeah, you can even say that that's a higher standard than a sannyasi, because a sannyasi doesn't have to live with a woman and control himself, you know. So to really follow that standard is immensely high, you know, actually. Yes. But anyway, that's a slightly different topic. So let's get back to here. Yes. So, and very interesting, Prabhupada is explaining, that's why kshatriyas and kings were allowed to have many wives. So for many years, I thought this would be because they have such a big sexual appetite that one wife is not enough or something. But now, once we understand the whole subtleties, it is because they were so heroic leaders that the auspicious source of energy from one woman was not enough. They had several wives just to get more of this feminine energy so they could be really heroic leaders. Yeah, that's the reason. That's the reason. Yes. So, I mean, this is quite interesting, you know, how things are working there, you know, with this feminine energy. Yes.
When I hear this, it almost sounds like maybe this king had a big false ego, so he had 10 women worshipping him, he could go out and, yeah, I'm really the best out here.
Yes, one could think so. And that leads us to one point, which we can mention here, that for all those who are driving a female vehicle, the main way to dissolve the false ego is to put yourself below a husband or men, you know, in dealings with men, not only on that level, but that's the main purpose of male life for women, to actually subdue the false ego, to dissolve it, to practice on the husband how to become selfless, humble servant. Because as a mother and wife, you know, as a woman, you're going to have to serve, whether you like it or not. The kids are crying, middle of the night, you have to jump, you know. So that's why actually mother's love is really the purest love in this material world, because she is most selflessly serving, you know. And that's really why women should be married, because of that. That's the purpose of married life. And I can observe it. All those ladies who have never been married, or often also who have never had children, they're often very self-centered, if not to say selfish. You know, it's just I, me, and mine. Even in spiritual terms, my program, my sadhana, my trip to India, my schedule, my service, my reading time, mine, 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 you know. And if a woman becomes wife and mother, she's just going to have to put that more on the back burner, you know. Of course, she doesn't want to lose it all completely. She still has to find a balance. But she has to sacrifice herself for the benefit of other living entities. And the only way for a woman not to become selfish when she doesn't have any children is to have that same selfless mood of sacrifice for other devotees, for the upliftment and benefit of other devotees. If a woman can have that mood, all right, then maybe she doesn't have to have children. But as a rule, women don't have that mood. They don't naturally sacrifice themselves for the upliftment of others. So that's why it is so important to get married for any woman. That's why really every woman should go through this lesson of simply putting herself below, because really grihastha life is the battlefield of false egos. You know, anybody who is married knows this, right? So much time and energy is wasted just on this, you know, just the ego, you know, and you want to have the last word and prove that you're right and she is wrong, or she is right and she is wrong, and I know better, and you know. And that's really the main lesson for the woman. She learns by putting herself below. So now what's the way for men to subdue and ultimately dissolve the false ego? What do you think? Let us see.
Maybe spiritual master, serving the spiritual master?
He's far away, you know.
He has to engage, he has to work, he has to...
Yes, but...
His job description.
Yes, yes, okay. Yes, but no more precisely. I mean, it's true, but more precisely.
The husband also has to satisfy the wife. He also cannot do his own thing.
Yeah, that's definitely also there. I have seen how men have changed so much too when they have children, because they also have to become more selfless. That's definitely true. But now there's one more really strong thing. How do the men dissolve their false ego? It's not so easy to guess. Most people never guess it. All right, just to save time. In cooperation with other men. That's where you get it. You know? Because you imagine every man wants to dominate and lead and take charge. Well, you're going to have some ego clashes here, you know, because every man has that nature, because somebody has to do that job. So Krishna gave it to the men. But then incorporating and having to cooperate, with other men. That's the big purification for the men. Right? And we see, not easy. Most conflicts come about through men not being able to cooperate and not being the humble servant, but wanting to be the supreme master and enjoyer there, you know. And the ultimate example is Prabhupada's godbrothers. They also could not cooperate, you know. That's why whole Bhaktisiddhanta's mission failed, because they could not work together, combinedly having one big movement, but everybody preferred to be the big boss of their own little mat, you know. It's a whole ego thing, nothing else. So that just shows how difficult it is to cooperate. And that's where the men get their purification, you know. So Krishna has a perfect design there, you know, very nice. And that also is in the working world too. You know, there you have to fight and rub there with other men and you know. And, yeah.
There's a letter, not to... It was Bondaraj, and Prabhupada wrote, "You can come here, and you can engage me in your mission." No? Prabhupada
yes.
was even taking, you know, was offering his humble service.
Yes.
In the movement of Bondaraj, if he would come.
Yes. Yeah. Or Prabhupada, until his last breath, he always tried to invite his godbrothers and inspire them to work together, you know. Yes.
It's interesting that even in spiritual life, no? In this happens there, you know. We
yes.
should expect something else, but it's not.
Yes, and that just shows how subtle the ego is, you know. It's really the most subtle part of the subtle body. It's so tricky and so deep and, ooh, you know. Yes.
Yeah. Saying of Srila Prabhupada, your love for me will be shown
how much
you
cooperate. Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yes. Very true. And he also said the real danger for ISKCON comes from within ISKCON,
yes.
and not from outside. Meaning same thing, you know, this difficulty
yes.
of cooperation, you know. That's the price we have to pay in order to really be part of a worldwide Sankirtan movement here of Lord Chaitanya, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have to pay that price of really working as a team, you know? Yes. Yes, good. So, woman's position within spiritual culture is the auspicious source of energy to men. Actually, it's a very high responsibility, really, because men, as we saw, they do need this feminine energy in order to be inspired. You know, and interestingly, there is even analysis. You know, and that, for example, practically all criminal men, they are not married. They don't have family. So this feminine energy actually channels the male energy into the right direction, into a productive, uplifting thing, you know, especially, of course, if the purifying duty is done in Krishna consciousness. But even without Krishna consciousness, it keeps the man on track. They have, you know, they have a reason to live for and work hard. And that actually, it's so built into the male vehicle that men actually get some satisfaction from this. That they actually like it. They like to be that protector and provider. Yes. And if the woman takes that role, he usually doesn't like it. Because it's his role. You know? Right? Yeah. And just interesting, if men don't have this auspicious source of energy, then very easily their masculine energy gets diverted into a destructive and criminal and violent way. Yes. Yes. Also violent towards women. The violence in the world towards women, you know, rape and all these kind of stuff, it is constantly increasing, And it is, because this whole male female energy thing is out of balance there, you know? And then for some reason, whatever reasons it may be, they're not getting this female auspicious source of energy to be inspired to do the right thing, and that's why, you know, it backfires into violent and destructive and criminal way, you know. We'll get to this later again when we talk about protection of a woman, also quite interesting, you know. Okay, so let me see, where are we? Yeah, so only Brahmanas and Sannyasis don't need this feminine auspicious source of energy for their encouragement. The woman has to be subordinate to him in the background, not next to or in the foreground. So, and this principle, really, it is not only there in married life, but it is really there on all levels. It is also there within management, within society at large. You know, you find the same principles there, that the woman is meant to be the auspicious source of energy and inspire the men to be leaders. It really is working on all levels. I experience it all the time. You know, sometimes my false ego also gets the better of me and I want to be the hero there. And boom, it always backfires. You know, it is not, it's just not appreciated from the men, and I get a negative response, and then I usually smile to myself and say, just see, driving the female vehicle, you can't avoid it, whether you're married or not. You know, if you want to be in harmony with a man, you have to put yourself below and give your energy to them and be like the mother, really, and not trying to be competitive. That's the point. You know? Yes. Now, one thing is, and this is especially important for men to understand, because, as Prabhupada says, only very brahminical men don't need this feminine energy. See, very easily what happens in practical life, that because men need that energy, I hope you don't take this personal in any way. I'm simply sharing it with you here. Sometimes the men, they steal that feminine energy in the name of preaching, for example, by always preaching to women and taking care of women or something. But actually what is really going on is that they need this feminine energy to be inspired, because they might not be in the category of a brahmana or sannyasi or something, you know. And then in the name of preaching and caring, we simply steal some of this energy. But we don't want to take responsibility. No, 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 we don't want to marry her. Of course not. I'm a brahmachari or something. You know, you understand? Yes or not? This is going on a lot. I observe it all the time. You know, that brahmacharis in Ukraine or somewhere, oh, they're so nice, they always preach to women and they care and they want to care for women, because it is actually built into the male vehicle. You know, Krishna arranged it like that. But, you know, it means we should actually marry one and really take care of her, and then we can have that female energy, you know. But often what happens, also out of ignorance, because these things are not known to men, that's why I want to share this with you, you know. The proper system is not to try and avoid by hook or by crook, to avoid this married life, but then stealing a few drops of feminine energy here and there, you know. And then naturally the poor woman, she is misunderstanding this. She thinks, oh, he is interested in me. He wants to marry me, you know, because woman's nature, we get to this later, already from young childhood, it's built into the female vehicle. She's always looking for this prince to give her heart to. This already starts at 3, 4, 5 years of age, very, very young. It's also important for the men to know this, you know. So, you know, if a man just stealing a bit of energy here, of course, the woman, she feels this. She feels, oh, this guy is running on my energy here, you know. Yes, yes. He gets inspired by my feminine energy and by my company and association, you know. So he is interested in me. He wants to marry me. But then he says, what, marriage? What's this? Of course, I'm a brahmachari, I don't want to get married, you know. So then we are beating the purifying system, you know. We are not getting that purifying effect by really accepting Krishna's system and accepting the purifying duty, you know. So this is important to understand. And also, especially as leaders or potential caretakers and so on, we have to be able to see, you know, when a young boy actually should be moving on and get married. And hang on here, he is just pinching some energy here, you know, in different ways. And well, but he should actually move on. If he needs that energy, let him be married and take responsibility for one wife. You know, and that will encourage him to do the purifying duty, and. So that's the reason why it is actually pretty important to always be situated in one ashram, in some ashram, you know, because every ashram has its purifying duties and also its protection, you know. But if we are not situated, if we are not a brahmachari, but we are also not a grihastha, then, you know. So what are the purifying duties here? And where are we getting here our feminine energy from? And, you know, we have to be very careful and introspective. And we have to apply the proper purifying process. Otherwise, we are the ones who are missing out. You know, we might maybe get through life in a cozy and comfy way by avoiding the hard work of earning some livelihood to maintain a family, you know, because that's very often a main reason why men don't want to get married, because they think, oh, why should I go out there and work in some kami office and earn some money and... this is all too tiring. No. Let me just stay in the temple. And yeah, all right, I'll preach to the women and catch a few drops here and there. And, you know, I can work my way through life here somewhere. But that's not the purpose of life, just working yourself, you know, in a comfortable way through life. But we want to get some purification here. And the main way to get that is really by going through the ashrams. That's why Krishna gave us these ashrams as, you know, purifying system, you know. So we can go through the whole thing and, you know, we accept the duties in each ashram and we get the, open the window again a bit, and we get the purification, we get the protection of each ashram, you know. And yeah, that's kind of Krishna's system, really, you know. And especially because this feminine energy is so important for most men as well. So it's not that only the women need to be married, but really most men need it too, at least at some stage of their life, you know, for this reason that only that feminine energy really motivates them. And very often, I mean, I'm not hinting here at anybody, I don't even know you well enough, but very often you can see that when a man is not married, he often, yeah, he just can't get anything properly together, you know? He's kind of hanging around and doing a bit here and there, and you know, but he's not really moving forward, you know? You know what I mean? Some stagnation is there and just hopping from one foot to the other somehow, you know, but not really marching forward, you know. And that's the reason. That's why I want to explain this to you. So you know the reason why, because of this importance of this feminine energy giving you inspiration, you know. And as Prabhupada in the previous quote said, yes, these kami men, they get inspiration by newer and newer girls. You know, you remember he was saying mm-hmm. that. So that's how non-devotees, kamis, they get this energy in a perverted way just by enjoying sex life and, oh, I've got a new girlfriend, and, you know, that gets them going, and yeah, they're working hard to buy a house and have a good car and everything to impress her and you know, and then newer, newer girls. So that's where they get this energy from, you know, which is, of course, an adamic way of doing it, you know. Yes.
May I just put another Jayadvaita Swami quote?
Yes.
He says, woman, she wants a relationship. Man, he wants to score. Woman, he wants to score. And this is one of the...
To score.
To score, woman, you know, score.
Score.
She wants a relationship, she wants to score. And that is one of the big shortcomings of the society. You don't learn this in school, no? There has to be this, you know, why is this man-woman connection?
Yeah.
What you were just saying, basically, you don't hear this, you know?
Yes. And I mean, not only in school, but also, I mean, I almost feel like saying this course should be part of the Bhakta program or something, you know? Seriously, you have to know, you have to, you know, understand the whole mechanism in Krishna's system and what is what and, you know, how it's meant to work and why is there such chaos out here in the world, you know, because this is all thrown overboard, Krishna's system, you know? How can we lead our spiritual life? How can we advise others, you know, even in marriage problems or something? If we don't know these things, you know, we will give the wrong advice, you know. And we can miss the boat. I mean, I tell you frankly, for the ladies, I've had it that some women, you know, especially when they're a little older, when they're around 40 or something, sometimes with tears in their eyes, they say to me, my God, I wish I had heard all this 20 years ago. I would have led my life differently. Yes. So this is what I'm coming across again and again and again, you know, and the same thing can also be for men there, you know, that really, you know, we can really make so much more use out of this process of Krishna consciousness if we get this knowledge and this understanding early, you know. Yes.
I also read that Prabhupada said that, like in connection to the marriage, he said every young boy and every young girl should be married. He said like that. In principle, they should be married.
Yes. I mean, especially in this materialistic society which propagates sex life so much. I mean, I think this is also one lesson in ISKCON that really, you know, 95% of all men also should go through this Grihastha. You know, it's really a very small percentage, you know, which is so brahminically inclined that they don't need this feminine energy, you know. And very often also amongst men it leads to all kinds of health problems and dysfunctions and imbalances and all this. That's one reason, this feminine energy, you know. Yes. We artificially try to block this out, you know, and then all kinds of other things are out of place and balance and so on, you know. Yeah, because I mean once we understand, Prabhupada says it straight out that only brahmanas, and I mean a true brahmana, this is not a cheap thing to really be brahminical, you know, only brahmanas, not second initiates, we are not talking about those brahmanas, you know, who have second initiation, of those we have plenty, but how brahminical are they really? So it means when Prabhupada says here brahmanas, he's talking about brahminically inclined people, you know, not second initiates, you know. So only brahmanas and sannyasis don't need this feminine energy. I mean, God, this makes it pretty clear, you know, that really most of us need, at least for some time of our life, you know. Yes. And better we hear this earlier so we can arrange our life accordingly, you know. Yes. Okay. Yeah, well, it's just such an important thing, and of course I really want you to understand this properly, you know. Yes.
Actually, two questions which are somewhat interconnected. To this last points we discussed. So, first, could you give some practical examples of the stealing of energy, how it looks like in practical life? And second, like, if I imagine a temple and some prabhus and Maharajis either living there, both or congregations, either way mixed, and on the weekend we see each other and everything. So, how should this principle be applied within management and temple cooperation and so on without this energy stealing thing?
Well, first of all, to number one, you know, I mentioned already the classic practical example is when a man is always very attentive and eager to preach to the women.
To any women or to one particular?
Any or one particular. Doesn't matter. Yeah, that means he's stealing a few drops of energy here, you know? Right? When he always, you know, is very attentive to them and so on.
Responding to the, like, if they ask for some help, yes, yes, much. So that's that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we don't want to establish that men should not help women. Definitely not. Because, I mean, we will go, in future, we will have tomorrow the topic that they actually should, you know. But it's a subtle difference, you know, whether, for example, a married man who's got his source of energy, he's got his Lakshmi Devi there in the house, and he's getting all the inspiration from her, he can very nicely help a woman to carry the suitcase or something without stealing some energy from her. And he can preach to her, you know, to people at the Sunday feast program without stealing that energy. You know? So it is a subtle thing. It is not a question of, is he preaching to a woman? And as soon as he's preaching to a woman, he must be stealing some energy. You know? But it is a question of need. Is there a certain need there? And it is very subtle. Because we are so unconscious, we might never even have thought of it, that there is a need. You know? But, you know, also the women can pick it up. You know, I can immediately feel when somebody is needy here. You know? Because it simply comes out in the same way how a man can feel when a woman is needy, when she needs to be married. You know, you can also feel the vibrations, you know, even though she might not think, oh, maybe I can marry Ram Gopal Prabhu or something. But nevertheless, you know, nevertheless that need comes out, even though the boys might not think, oh, maybe I can marry Devaki Mataji. You know, but I can feel the need coming out. It simply, consciousness is such a powerful energy, and you can feel if you're a little perceptive, you know, even if the person has no intentions with that particular person, but one can feel it, you know, and there's some compensatory mechanism going on there, Oh, I tell you, even gurus can feel it. They're joking about it. You know, how their unmarried women disciples, they feel often like a, you know, a substitute for a husband. Yes. Well-known thing. And then often, oh, thank God, my disciples are getting married, you know. And then they're glad and relieved. So it simply comes out, you know. Yes, it comes out in a subtle way, you know. So it is simply a question of the person, we call it being properly situated, you know. And if we are not properly situated, then there is this unfulfilled need, and then we just, yeah, it just comes out in a subtle way that we like to talk to women and preach to them, and we feel happy and joyful in their association, and we get some encouragement there, you know.
It was some kind of satisfaction, supplementary satisfaction.
Yes.
And the second part?
Second part, what was that again?
How to organize the cooperation in the temple or congregation without, while avoiding this stealing of energy?
Well, you know, this principle of the women being the auspicious source of energy, in the sense that they simply should take the subordinate position and help the men to be heroes. Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's also that energy exchange. Yes, it's true. But yeah, well, we can simply say, you know, that if a man is married and he's got his main source of feminine energy at home, you know, then there is, yeah, he's not so needy, you know. Then it's not so much that he is needy, but it's more like this, that if, and that's, yeah, I think we might have to leave this for tomorrow. You know, simply to discuss the whole thing, that these days, because out of ignorance of these principles, the main problem is that the women are competing with the men. You know, they are trying to be in the front. They don't, and they try and compete, you know, and that means they're not agreeing to be the auspicious source of energy anymore to the men. And then the men actually become weak. They don't get that energy to lead, because the woman uses it for herself. Right? Yes. And that weakens men. They become all wimpy and undecisive and can't make decisions. And because also man's nature is that for the male ego, it is very painful to be the loser in the eyes of a woman. Right? I'm sure you all have that experience to a greater or lesser degree. You know, that it is very deflating, very, you know, really, it's like, you know, putting a pin into an air-filled balloon, yeah, just, you know. Yeah, it really is. Very disempowering, you know. It's one of the worst things for men to, you know, if she says, just see, I told you so. You know, if you had just done it as I told you, then this would not have happened. You know, this is one of the worst and most discouraging things for a man. In fact, it can completely block him. I've really seen this in many examples. You know, if the woman tries to be ahead and she's number one and she's the pure devotee and she knows everything better, it's completely blocking for a man, you know. Completely. I've seen examples where the man just takes shelter of alcohol, you know. He is a Brahmin initiated devotee and he just gets so frustrated and depressed that all he can think of is just get drunk. you know. Yes, yes, I've really seen it. And people, when they don't understand these deeper things, they, of course, they say, God, what, your husband is a drunkard? Just get divorced, leave him. You know, they give the wrong advice. They don't even realize that this could have anything to do with her. They don't realize. They don't. You know, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. I know so many examples of this, where everybody takes the side of the woman because she looks all like she is doing the right thing externally. But, you know, then there's all this undercurrent energy going on. And that's really what happens when she is always ahead. It completely blocks him, you know. Or also a very common thing is if, like, in a devotee marriage, if the wife is always the pure devotee who is more advanced, I've seen it, that men can lose so much any interest in Krishna consciousness, and they just throw themselves into their career because they're their number one. There the wife has no idea what's going on, you know, and then he just becomes there the hero and the leader, where she has no input, you know. Yes, a very common thing. And she gets all frustrated. She doesn't realize, God, this husband is useless. Now he stopped chanting this, that. And she doesn't realize, well, it's because she is not agreeing to be the auspicious source of energy to him. Yes, yes. I've had this also, that experience in my own marriage, because I didn't know all these things when I was married. Nobody ever taught me these things. And it was funny, you know, whenever I said to my husband, you know, some well-meant advice, we women always want to give advice. And I was telling him, oh, why don't you do like this and this? Then he always gave this half-joking answer. He said, actually, you know what? I exactly wanted to do that. But now you told me, now I can't do it anymore. Yeah, can you relate to this maybe? Can you agree that this is how the male nature works? Some can agree. I tell you frankly, any man who is a good leader, he will not go along with this whole woman's equality nonsense, you know. He will make sure he's got the auspicious source of energy there of the women. Yes. I've really observed it. I'm always analyzing and trying to understand. And I've really observed, even amongst senior devotees, or those men who are good leaders, they make sure the women take the subordinate position so that they can get that auspicious source of energy. And all those men, you know, who are into this idea of, yes, let the women be in the front and equality, they're usually not such good leaders. Also interesting, you know, that even this tendency amongst men of supporting this equality thinking, there's also simply this ignorance there, because intuitively they can feel, I somehow need the support of the women, right? They can feel that, but they don't know how. They think they get the support of the women by saying, yes, you women should be in the front, yes. Right? But that's exactly how they don't get it. That they don't know, out of lacking this knowledge. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yes. And I've really observed it. It's really heavily going on. There's so much misunderstanding and lack of knowledge there that even, you know, senior devotees who have all the right intentions, because they don't understand these things, they just encourage the wrong thing. They're kind of sawing off the branch they're sitting on, basically. You know? You understand?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how important this whole topic is, you know? And that's why, for example, the Indian leaders, they know all these things. I don't know how consciously they know, but the culture is so strong that in India, and now you probably understand, you told me you were trying to encourage the women there to be in the front, you know, now you understand.
You spoke about that the men's, they're suppressing the women.
Of course, that's not good. But, I mean, to be honest, this often comes as a result, as a reaction to this competitive nature, you know? Because, see, in India, the women, the men, they know that if they allow this whole equality stuff to come in, they will be lost. They will not be able to be good leaders. They understand this. I don't know how consciously they understand. Maybe they, you know, don't really deeply realize why, but intuitively they know, you know, that this will be the end of whole order and spiritual culture and peace and harmony in society, you know? And that's why they don't go along with this. That's why they want to make sure, you know, the women take and play the role they are meant to play. And of course, if Krishna is removed from the top of the hierarchy, yes, as we said, the whole thing becomes abusive. So of course, not every man in India has Krishna on the top of the hierarchy, you know? You know? So that's the point. That's one, you know, main point to the men, that they have to play their role also. They have to be God conscious. They have to be Krishna conscious. They cannot be abusive, you know? Otherwise, how can the women put themselves below? You know, if they're, of course, from the women, the main fear is, oh, the man will just abuse and exploit and, you know, take advantage, you know. Yes. So that's the main thing the men have to understand, you know, that they have to really have Krishna on top of the hierarchy here. They have to be Krishna conscious so that the women are inspired to put themselves below. And then they will get the feminine energy, and then they can be good leaders, and they can provide, protect, take charge. Huh? So it's a whole... But of course, from the man's side, the fear is there, you know, that the women are not the auspicious source of energy. They are competing, you know, and then, oh, why should we take care of them?
That, or if that, mostly also it's just romantic, you know, it just, I've observed it from Brahmachari, devotees who have been long Brahmachari, changing into Grihastha ashram, just getting into it, you know, like glamorous, you know, like, you know, romantic, not checking each other's expectations,
See, I have also a second unit called Marriage and Spiritual Culture, and there I discuss the different ways of entering marriage, because even that is a whole different thing, you know, in materialistic culture where sex life is the goal of life, marriage is simply for sense enjoyment, nothing else, and romance. But in spiritual culture, it's very clear, it's for purification, it's for dissolving the false ego. That's what it's all about, you know. So the way they enter, completely different, you know? Yeah. Materialistic culture, you want this long period of association, trying out how much fun it will be. You want a guarantee for sense enjoyment,
and that's what,
you know?
I also think it's not only for, you know, materialistic, you know, society, but also with devotees, I've observed.
Yeah, because
it's not there,
has to be like that, because we carry all this materialistic conditioning, you know. That's why I feel such a need for this kind of education, because we are so conditioned, and we take this all into our spiritual practice, and we maintain it, we hang on to it, we don't even realize we are meant to transform and change our attitudes and moods and tastes and habits and all that, you know.
Also very individual thing. Yeah. Recently I heard a comment of one devotee, she married, and they're struggling, and she said, I I thought he will be my teacher, you know, like that, and somehow me teaching you, you know, it didn't work out. So the expectations are not clear. It's very difficult.
Yes.
This foundational principles you were speaking about, but also very detailed. What is the expectation?
Well, that's why we have a system. That's why there's an etiquette, how actually in spiritual culture one should enter marriage. You know, there's a certain process actually there. And and that's meant to protect us from all this pain and disappointment and like Radhanaswami says in Western culture or materialistic culture, better to say, you know, we give our heart away and we get pained and disappointed. And again, we give it away, and again, we get frustrated and disappointed and pained, and again, and again. But we can save ourselves from all this if we just agree to accept Krishna's system, really. You know, it's meant to protect us from all this kind of thing, you know. Yes. But to come back to your question, now I realize very clearly the answer. The answer is, as far as I understand, I can't shastrically back it up now, but as far as I understand, yes, this subtle energy exchange is going on, you know, even in management, but then a man should be married, you know, if he accepts that additional energy. At least he's taking responsibility for one woman, and he's performing his purifying duty. He cannot marry two or three now, according to the law, but at least he is honest enough that he takes responsibility for one, and he takes up that energy. And all right, you know, within management, okay, you know, because I know examples, I know a few good leaders in ISKCON, you know. I don't want to mention any names, but there's a few good leaders. They're married, and they also have female assistants. That's why the classic job of secretary is usually a woman, because she is giving her energy to the boss. And of course, because, you know, materialistic life, usually it goes further than that. He also has an affair with her or something. But you know, if it would be in a cultural context, there's actually nothing really that wrong with it. It is quite natural, you know. But, you know, and I've seen it with leaders who have secretaries and assistants, and it's very clear, I can see how they love to be his servant. You know, he is their hero, and they're working hard to please him, and he takes up that energy and is a good leader. You know, and I've even once spoken to one, I shared it with one, and he completely agreed. He said, yeah, you're right, I've got my wife, you know, I'm satisfied there, but yes, that helps me to be a good leader, you know. So to some extent, if it is all really according to the etiquette, you know, and you're also married to one person and you're performing your purifying duty as a grihastha, you're not just stealing the drops, but you're not taking responsibility, you know, then if it is all proper according to etiquette, then, well, that's why Kshatriya kings had several wives, you know.
So yes. What should brahmacharis do in a mixed community?
Well, that's the thing, you know. I mean, strictly speaking, you know.
There shouldn't be.
Well, I tell you one thing. My theory is that this is why also brahmacharis do sometimes need a mother. Yes, because then that is also feminine energy, you know. Yes. And that is a different relationship there then, you know. Yeah, because really this topic is even connected with the physical mother too, because she gives that initial feminine energy to the child. And it is well known that if man had a good mother who was really giving her energy to the boy, to her son, those boys become very emotionally very strong and balanced, and for them not so difficult to be celibate. But if a boy is neglected as a child and he doesn't get that feminine energy from his mother, then it will be hard for him to be celibate, and he's always running, he's feeling this deficit, and he's always running after this compensation in sex life. You're saying? So these are even recognized facts amongst non-devotees, you know? Yeah. So, you know, mother's energy is also playing a role there. Yes, of course, we have to be very, very careful with this, because there's not so many true mothers in these modern days. You know, mother means no sexual vibrations, no, you know, needs there, you know, so cannot be so easily applied. I'm just giving the principles here, you know. So I don't want you to go back to Köln now and think, okay, where can I find a mother here or something? So, you know, but it's coming in. And just one little story and then I will really finish for today. I want to share, which really confirms this. There's a few little things. For example, it is a Shastric injunction that when Guru's wife, you know, because also Grihasthas can be Guru. So if Guru's wife is a young, beautiful woman, she should not massage the boys. Yes, this is in the Bhagavatam. I should look for the proper quote. Yes, you also know it. So, I mean, you know, this shows that the women did have some dealings with the boys. I'm not quite sure what age they were or something, you know. But nevertheless, you know, this is there, you know. I mean, really, mothers are important personalities, not only the physical mother, but also the spiritual mother, you know. We have the seven mothers. One of them is the mother, the wife of a brahmana, you know, so a wife of a guru, you know. So the mothers are important personalities because of this feminine energy. And another thing, once Nuranjaswami told me this personally. I hope he doesn't mind sharing, but I'm sharing this here. There was one Mataji, what was her name called? Mother Isha. A Prabhupada disciple, senior old lady, she left her body some years ago. He wrote on Dandavat some articles about Mother Isha. Maybe some of you, if anybody reads Dandavat sometimes, you might have seen it. Anyway, to cut the whole story short, she was an old lady. She had a stroke then, and then she was put in a nursing home. And Ranjaswami went out of his way. He went there and visited her and chanted Hare Krishna with her in the nursing home, and. So, and then I once spoke to him privately about this. And then he said to me, Mother Isha, she is my mother in Krishna consciousness. And then he said, and that really moved me, he said, I don't go anywhere without remembering her. Yes. And I thought that was really remarkable for a sannyasi to say such a thing. You know, because one could very easily say, you know, what's that? You know, a march, not going anywhere without remembering a woman, you know. But no, that's the position of mother, you know. And that's, you know, also what you were answering yesterday for those two, one left already for you, who were not there yesterday, Ram Gopal Prabhu asked me, so how is it that you as a woman are holding a men's retreat here, you know? And I was saying, actually, in spiritual culture where women are seen as mothers, mm-hmm. this is nothing unusual. For 15 years I'm working in Bangladesh mainly with the boys. I hardly do anything with the girls, but mainly with the Brahmacharis and the student boys. And this works very nicely, very nicely. And I can see how this gives strength to many of the Brahmacharis, because they only see me as mother and nothing else, and I'm acting only as mother. For me, is any man a boy? Doesn't matter how old he is, you're all boys for me. So that's the mood of mother, you say. And this is beneficial, actually. It just cannot, and really I want you to all hear this, it cannot be so easily applied here in the Western world, you know, because the culture is not there, and most of the Brahmacharis have all kinds of, you know, lusty you know, experiences in their minds, you know. And that's why it is not so easy to apply. There in Bangladesh, none of the boys had ever had anything with a woman. They only know mother and nothing else. You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course. Yes, yes. So a different situation, you know. But all I can say is it simply shows how far we are away, you know, from spiritual culture. And this is really one, as far as I can understand it, is one problem why it is so difficult often for the boys to be in the ashram and so on, you know. And it's also artificial, and oh, you have to put the scheuklappen on here or something and can't look left or right, and it becomes a little emotionally dry, and you know, and you know, the heart needs a little bit of motherly affection and care and all this. But in a culture where it is all, everybody is tortured with lusty desires and experiences, not so easy to introduce this, you know? That's the point. But simply from my experience in Bangladesh, how well it works. And also just hearing such comment of Narayanaswami saying, yes, she is my mother in Krishna consciousness. And she was there. There is pictures where she is already, she's around 50, 55, so roundly, motherly woman sitting and transcribing Prabhupada's lectures, you know. So, and Narayanaswami was a young boy when he joined there as a Brahmachari. And she must have been that motherly person there in the temple, you know, making sure the boys all have something to eat and this and that and, you know. And that's the role actually the women should be playing, you know. And that makes the atmosphere more affectionate, and that's how the boys can get a little bit of that feminine energy there without having to steal it, you know, and not taking responsibility, you know, right? But as I said, well, this is only theory at the moment. I'm not recommending you now to, you know, look where you can find a mother there or something, you know. But it's good to understand how it is meant to work, because that is your serious question here. So how this is meant to work then in the, for Brahmachari and so on in the temple, and, you know, right? So that's how it is actually meant to work in Krishna's system, you know. That the boys do have a mother, you know. And I can see it even in Bangladesh. Usually the women don't live in the temple, but some temples have some elderly women there, you know, who have, live in a room, and they cook and this and that, and it does change the atmosphere, you know. There's just that feminine touch there and that female motherly energy, you know, and it's just a different mood, you know. Yes, we are meant to live with that. They're part of the whole system, you know. We can't just artificially block them out just because we attracted or something, you know. That's the point. Okay, last question, and then we finish.
Only a good example. I heard that Shivan Maharaj, he went to a very old Brajbasi lady and asked her that please accept me as your son.
Okay.
She lives next to Kusum Darova.
Okay.
Bane Bane Bari.
Yes.
Or Temple or
Yes. And what did she say?
Of course she accepted him.
She put her hand affectionately on his head. Yeah, that's the system. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many boys come to me and ask if they can be my son. And blessings, mother, blessings, you know. And I have to, with my bead bag usually, I don't like to rub the boys' heads, you know. And sometimes when they insist, then all right, with my bead bag, I touch their head. You know, it's a whole thing, you know. Yes. And once, and 10 years ago, there was, I had a godbrother there, and he was saying, oh, yes, you're my mother, and this and that. And then some other boy said, oh, you know, I also want to be your son. And I didn't really know this whole culture, and I kind of, yeah, I kind of was laughing a bit and saying, oh, well, I don't think I need this, you know, what am I going to do with it, you know. He nearly started crying. He was so offended. He was not a kid. He was 25 years old or something. And he almost broke out in tears that I made that comment. You know, it was just in my beginnings there, I didn't understand the way they really mean it, you know. Yeah, yeah, so it's a whole thing, you know. Yeah.
Well, it's really nice to say that they obviously have learned to see, you know, first they have a good relation to their mother and continue this in you, you know.
Exactly, yeah, yeah,
root,
yes.
You know, deep-rooted,
yes.
Mother,
yes,
mother,
yes, yes. Yes, and not only in me, but in any woman,
yeah.
You know, and that's Chanakya Pandit's instruction, to see every woman except your wife as mother. Yes, we will come to this later when we discuss how to address a woman. That's why women should be addressed as mother. To help them to cultivate this mood of mother, and to help the men to see every woman as mother, you know. Okay, so we will simply continue there tomorrow. You know, we talked about a fair bit here. So we will go through the consequences more detailed and finish that and then continue.